Good afternoon to all our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International Volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards, thanks to Canadian band Mr. Something Something from Toronto and the Afrobeat poet Ikwunga for our theme song, You Are Beautiful. My name's Jim Hutchins, and this week I'm joined by our host, Mona Hill, co-host.
Hi.
There you are.
I'm here.
And today we return to the labor front in our province to talk about the upcoming labor issues campaign training and the connection to human rights. Our guest today is from the Saskatchewan Federation of Labor, and he's a lawyer, Larry Kowalchuk. Welcome, Larry.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
We're both sort of trying to focus here. Welcome
focus,
back, everybody.
Yep.
We are here. I'm looking at the back of this this beautiful book that Larry brought with him. And the title of it is We Have a Choice, and it's been published by the SFL. And on the back it says that there are currently 98,000 workers that are represented by the South Federation of Labor in Saskatchewan. It says, our government's policies determine what our economy and environment look like. These policies, in turn, affect our daily lives and those of future generations in the most fundamental of ways. Saskatchewan does not belong to any politician, political party, or government. It belongs to the people. If you don't consent to the shift from public responsibility to private profiteering, what can you do? So that's where we're going to start with Larry. This has been a sort of an ongoing process, hasn't it?
Yes, the Political Strategy Committee of the Federation of Labor has been working with the support of all of its affiliates on a what's called the Labor Issues Campaign, and it started about 2.5 years ago. And the purpose of it is to make sure that we are acting responsibly in holding government accountable. And you can't do that if you don't know what they're doing. And so we've had a series of booklets that have been printed and distributed to try and inform people about the various things that the government has been doing since we elected them. The first one was about human rights and labor rights, and I think we were on your show about that.
Yes, mm-hmm. You were.
The laws and policies of the government that affected people in terms of their legal rights as citizens and in relationship to their human right to all kinds of things.
Right.
Then we then produced a booklet on healthcare and mm-hmm. what was happening in healthcare around the province. Another one on education and what was happening around the province. Another one about the Crown corporations and the public sector and public services and what the government has been doing there. Another one about an organization called CLAC. And finally this one. And what we did with this booklet is that throughout the province, in talking to thousands of people, there's a lot of government policies and actions or inactions that are hurting people. And this booklet is an attempt to sort of say, well, maybe we should look at why. Why are we all facing these issues? And so we provide in this booklet sort of like an expose about the government's policies in relationship to that question. Why are we being hurt? And why are we, the people, not benefiting from our province and its resources?
That's a good point to start on, because inside the front cover of the book, it says Saskatchewan citizens have a tradition of supporting policies which keep profits and jobs here, and that these policies create more equal access to services and a fairer division of our collective wealth. And that covers Crown corporations, provincial public services, local public services, and cooperatives, and then the conversation about when development is in the hands of the private sector, what happens?
Yes. Well, What we're saying in the bottom of the first page in the booklet is that there are two legitimate and honest held views about who should be making decisions that affect our lives, and on what basis those decisions are made. One view, which is an honestly held view, and it's a dominant view, at least in terms of the way we've been operating, is that the market should. Let the corporations own and control those things that affect our lives, and the determining factor is how much money can you make off of it. And we call that the market economy. The other one is
let me stop you there.
Yes.
Isn't that supposed to eventually get to a point where it does benefit those people, say, the ordinary person in the province?
Trickle down.
Isn't that supposed to be how it's supposed to work, Larry?
Well, there are a lot of economic theorists who suggest that that's the way it's supposed to work. And what they, you know, some of them say, they disagree and they actually fight with each other about it. But there is a theory that says, well, if you let the market make the decisions that affect your life, then the super rich will generously share the wealth with everyone. But the facts and the evidence suggest that's not quite happening.
Well, you know, I think we have a perfect example of that happening here in our province, considering the market economy of housing in the past few years. We have more people homeless than I think probably in the history of our province. And the market economy is booming in housing. People are making a lot of money on housing. Why are there so many homeless people? So just something I thought off the top of my head. Gee, there's a good example.
That's a great example. And in fact, that is one of the significant aspects of this new booklet and the consequences. We pose to people and say, look, here's how rich the rich are. There's the growing gap, a study published by the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives, and actually the United Nations and groups and so on around Canada, United States, around the world, are actually now sort of saying, look, how rich the rich are getting. And Saskatchewan has a booming economy, but that boom is confined to making particularly those who are in the resource industry very, very, very rich in a number of ways. One is huge profits. The Globe and Mail just published a study of the top 1,000 corporations in Canada. Of those 1,000, 50 control two-thirds of the total wealth of Canada. Of those 50, 17 are resource companies. And after their obscene profits, which are being condemned even by the International Monetary Fund, after their obscene profits in terms of paying themselves millions of dollars in wages and salaries, after all of the costs, after all the wages and so on, the resource companies in Canada average a net profit after tax and paying their own huge profits to themselves, a net profit of $325,000 per person they employ. And that money's not going to the people. It's leaving Saskatchewan. And so what's happening is that people are being left behind. The cost of living is going up, and people are being left behind. They're not getting a share of our resources or the profits. They're not getting a share of the market. And quite frankly, while housing, I guess there's this, I don't know how to explain it, except there seems to be this sort of focus on making money. And so rents in the urban centers are incredible.
Yeah.
But we're finding in rural Saskatchewan, the situation's even worse. And in going around the province in the last 2 weeks, the extent of homelessness and poverty is probably more dramatic than it is in the cities. I would say definitely is. So this trickling down, I guess, I don't know, like, where is it? What seems to be the problem is very simple. This government doesn't seem to want to govern. And so they're leaving the decision-making, including about the topics like water and shelter and food, up to the market.
Right.
Which is not what we thought government was supposed to be for.
You mentioned that it seems that homelessness seems to be worse in the rural areas. And you mentioned that you've been traveling around the province in the last few weeks. Can you give us some examples?
I can give you an example. We were in Yorkton, and Yorkton's, you know, it's in sort of like center of the breadbasket of the world.
And it's a lovely town.
Yes.
I've been there.
It's always been a prosperous place.
Yes. And certainly you would think with food and shelter.
Yep.
Their resources for providing for shelter and food have been drained. It's almost an emergency situation, and we hear that the use of a need for a shelter and for food is up to 2,000 people, I think at least a week. 2,000 people in Yorkton per week have to access shelter and food. We were in Swift Current and Weyburn and Humboldt. And Humboldt, I mean, for the first time people can remember, has now opened up a soup kitchen. And Humboldt, again, is in sort of the heart of agricultural prosperity. They opened up a soup kitchen. People are being found sleeping in dugouts, in parks, and even in homes that are for sale in places like that in rural Saskatchewan.
I'm having trouble reconciling the image of the soup kitchen with a boom province. What are we missing here?
We're missing compassion. We're missing compassion in our government, it seems. Because the government, I mean, it exists for a reason. We pay our taxes for a reason. We expect that everyone pays a fair share. But if companies, we call it market man, sort of personifying the market. Market man seems to be getting most of the support from government, which is to sort of let them just do what they want, and the social safety net, if you want to call it that, or just simply compassionate programs. I mean, they're cutting. I mean, even for people who are homeless and poor, they're still cutting. They're cutting support programs for them too, constantly. I mean, in our booklet, we outline sort of a number of those cuts, and we've been, you know, hearing more and more about them. Domestic abuse programs, all of those things. So it's hard. I mean, in one of our gatherings, we call them, because we're trying to confine ourselves to just discovering what the facts are and then reporting what the facts are, not our opinion. This one woman said, it was a very tearful story. I mean, it was difficult for her to say, but she says, you know, and I ask you to think about this. When was the last time when you're walking the streets in small town Saskatchewan, you saw a homeless person? Or, and she said even more seriously, know someone who's actually homeless. That's not the Saskatchewan that I grew up in, she says. And I can't remember that. And I just put a homeless person on the bus, hoping that they, when they get to where they're going, have a place to stay. And it was the hardest thing in my life I ever did, because there's no place for them here. This is rural Saskatchewan. I mean, that rural Saskatchewan is sort of, people in rural Saskatchewan are so compassionate. That's our history. Even in the Great Depression, people got together, but there's no ability. There's just nothing. There's nothing there. There's no places to live. There's no places. There's no food. There's no support systems. There's no even jobs.
And how easy is it to get an education and have a job when you're homeless?
Well,
I'm facing this in my work.
You can't.
Completely.
And sort of tied to that, sort of precariously on the brink, are students graduating from university or going who aren't poor, and their parents who are, the middle class, they're in a precarious situation. Like they're that far, they're that far away. You can't show you on the radio, mm-hmm. but they're that mm-hmm. far away from being homeless themselves. We talked to this one woman who, and her daughter, they came to a meeting. Her student debt, she got her 4-year degree. Her student debt is $90,000. The best job she could get might pay her, $1,400 or $1,500 a month gross. She needs to pay more than 2/3 of that to get a 1-bedroom apartment. And then what's left over for food, clothing, all of those things. It's that close. So kids are staying home. Parents are having to have 2 jobs, yeah. Both parents working.
I was just thinking, Larry, that I think I paid just over $40,000 for my house when I bought a house.
How long ago was that, Jim?
Well, it's back in 78.
Yeah. Just, in the midst of this conversation, I'm going to repeat this a couple of times during the show. Next Thursday in Regina, there's a public housing forum that's going to be taking place at the United Way. And it's being hosted by the Regina Tenants Association. The doors are going to be open at 6:30. I'll be there on behalf of the NGO that I work for because we have had problems with our quote-unquote students or apprentices who have been working through their 9-month program to get their education, get life skills, who have ended up homeless in the midst of their program, and it doesn't work. They have this opportunity to get their education, and they end up homeless for many different reasons. But bottom line, when you end up homeless and you can't find another place to live, and you end up living on the street, and the anger that comes out of that, the issues that come out of that, not having clean clothes, not being able to eat, how do you function in a classroom setting when you haven't eaten? When you've been sleeping, as you said, in a ditch. How do you do that? So there is a public forum at the United Way next Thursday. I would urge anyone who has anything to say about this, any solution, ideas for solutions, we need to get together and talk about this, but not just talk about it, but find solutions and push as hard as we can to get these solutions implemented. So let's move on from homelessness.
Well, if I could just...
2-hour show on this.
Well, I think it actually could be it's a moral...
Yeah.
It's a moral issue that we all have to embrace and sort of appreciate the fact that it exists. We can't sort of pretend that things are really, really good mm-hmm. when people are like that. And just, in the booklet, like we try to present facts, and they are getting worse, but... In Saskatchewan, and this is a report from the Food Banks Canada. In our booklets, we provide the sources for all this so that people know it's not our opinion. Mm-hmm. But in Saskatchewan, between March of 2009 and March of 2010, so that's 1 year, the increase in people assisted by food banks is 20%. That's 20% in 1 year. Food bank use in the province of Saskatchewan. Food. 44%, almost half, are children. And like you were saying, Mona, I mean, if you're homeless, well, if you're also hungry, and you're a child, think about how can that child function in school?
Right.
How can that, we worry about healthcare costs rising and so on, poverty, mm-hmm. And we have in the booklet again a study that was done in Ontario. Mm-hmm. Poverty costs and hurts everyone. It's not just that child that's going to go hungry.
Absolutely.
It's going to be our whole system. Mm-hmm. Because that child's then going to be sicker than most, and it's going to need health care more. It's going to need assistance at school and assistance in life.
And a young person who's had to leave their education because of homelessness will not be able to actively sustain employment. Therefore, we've lost a new worker. We've lost someone who originally started out with great dreams of improving their education, getting a good job, contributing to our society. We've lost it. We have 5 minutes left in this segment, Larry.
Okay.
And we just started on this book. You mentioned water.
There's two other significant issues in the book besides the growing gap. One is water. You can go on the government's websites and get this information, but it was shocking. There's 184 communities and locations in Saskatchewan, which, by the way, do not include reserves, some of which have been on boil water advisories for a decade. 184 communities who are in boil water advisories. This is our drinking water. And what's happening is that our water supply is dwindling, and there's no program or plan by the government to deal with it. But the market man, we call him, and it's in the booklet, our water, our fresh water, the water that we could use to drink, our potable water, is being pushed to the resource companies. In billions and billions of gallons of fresh drinking water are now being converted to use for mining oil and potash, water which we'll never be able to drink or use again.
But don't those companies, those corporations create jobs for people?
Well, at some level they do. Like I reported about the Globe Mail, yes, there is sort of jobs. But, you know,
there's
short...
There's jobs and then there's jobs.
Well, it's more at what price? I mean, there's jobs for the few that have access to those jobs. But in the meantime, those people, their children and their parents are probably going to have difficulty living outside of poverty because of the lack of jobs for them or the lack of support systems or health care or water or food.
Right. We could take that even further, another step further, because there's another section in the booklet that talks about something that we have focused on and a few times on this show, about the nuclear waste storage dump that is proposed, that Nuclear Waste Management Organization has come into the province and you know, offered what I would call, quote-unquote, opportunities to various communities to have them build a nuclear waste storage dump, and not just dump, but a storage facility so that it can be reharvested later and that sort of thing. And one of the things that occurred, a big issue for the people of the North that came out after the walk from Pine House and at the legislature in Regina, was they had a water ceremony. And this is the connection I'm making, was the people walked all the way from northern Saskatchewan to Regina, and everywhere they went, everywhere they stopped along the way, they collected water from those communities, and they brought them to Regina, and they had this really great ceremony where they poured the water all in together, and they talked about the water table and how we are connected all through the whole province, and eventually through a lot of the rest of the country, through our water table. And what the potential of disaster could do to our water. So there's that connection as well, and that's discussed in the book a little bit here, too. What do we got left? A minute? We're going to get a clock and put it in the office here, in the studio, so I don't have to keep asking Jim. So hopefully this is the last time you'll ever have to hear me ask Jim what time it is.
Mr. Wolf.
Yeah. So, Larry, to wrap up this portion, what do you want to say?
We want to invite everyone. The Labor Issues Campaign isn't just about labor. The unions in Saskatchewan have a history of social unionism, we call it, which is the labor movement has always been a compassionate and caring organization, and have always tried to develop programs and support social programs and economic programs that benefit everyone. And so this campaign is to try and get the information out, build links with everybody, so that we can all sort of at least identify what choice we have. And if we do have a choice, then let's make that choice on the basis of facts.
I think that's a key word, choice. Yeah, we need to have choice. Take it away, Jim. And come back. We'll be back after the break. We're going to play a special song for you, too.
Yes, we are.
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? They say in Harlan County there are no neutrals there. You'll either be a Union man or a thug for J.H. Blair. Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? My daddy was a miner, and I'm a miner's son. He'll be with you, fellow workers, until this battle's won. Tell me, which side are you on?
Getting the microphones back in order. Okay. Yeah, we're back. Welcome back. This is Mona Hill and Jim Hutchings on Human Rights Radio. And we have with us as our guests, Larry Kowalczyk from the SAS Federation of Labor. And we have been discussing the latest campaign. Larry's been traveling around the province with other members of the SFL, educating people about the current issues in our province. And
now, just a little sidebar to what we were talking about. I was just talking with Larry about a discussion that I regularly have with my son about whether unions are outdated, whether we still need unions, or whether they're a thing of the past. And I'm trying to impress upon him that the things we have now needed to be guarded. And that's what we need unions for, at least in part.
If I quickly answer, and this is part of what the sort of campaign is actually trying to show people, because the media and, of course, this present government and the corporations are very anti-union right now and sort of portraying unions as selfish, and all we care about is wages at the workplace, and that's it. But Saskatchewan in particular has a different history with unions. It's through unions that working people, or at this point in time in history, almost anybody, can get together and say, look, what kind of society do we want? How do we want to make it better? And unions historically in Saskatchewan fought for and supported Medicare, pensions, the eight-hour day, safety laws, human rights, actual human rights laws that provide for the rights of all citizens, and maternity leave, overtime. I mean, your son works in the oil patch. If it wasn't for unions, there'd be no overtime, even though they're not unionized. The laws provide for things to make sure people are safe and treated with respect. And people, that's the labor movement for that. At this moment in history as well, though, there's another important aspect to unions which I would encourage your son and others to sort of think about. And that is, if you want to get active or support the issues of women, if you believe women should have equality, for example, and not be, you know, face discrimination or violence, if you think that, you know, people who unfortunately end up in poverty need social assistance and homes or shelter, if you think that racism is a bad thing, if you think homophobia is a bad thing, all of the groups and organizations that used to have funding for that have had their funding cut. It's a strategy that's North America-wide. And so there's only, so, you know, those groups have been dependent upon government funding. There's only one organization of people that is not dependent upon government for its funding, and that's unions. And unions are stepping up to the plate and accepting that responsibility now to say, look, tell us what, how, I mean, because all members of unions are also citizens, right? So health care, education, all of those things affect workers and unions the same as it does anybody else. So this campaign is out there saying, you know, here's the issues in case you don't know. But what we're finding out more is there's a lot more issues that we don't know about, and mm-hmm. we're working to try and build an accountability movement in Saskatchewan. We're all citizens, with the assistance of unions, because we do have resources to say to government, it doesn't matter what political party you are, pay attention to us. These are our needs. And if you want to be government, then you need to help. Like, hold out your hand and help. Because if you're not going to do it, then somebody else should take your place. So, you know, it's not just about working conditions and wages. But unfortunately, that is the way it's being portrayed. So, you know, and I'd say to your son and anybody else listening out there, when you're unemployed, when you want to go to school and get a degree, if you don't want to work 16 hours a day, if you don't want to work be safe, if you don't want women to have equality, fine. Unions aren't needed. But I kind of think that's a narrow view, if I could put it.
Okay. I want to make an announcement. Thank you for that, Larry. Just before we move on, because I know I'm going to forget, because we always run out of time, because our topics are always so full. The Community Partnership Against Violence has their 10th annual Peacemakers Breakfast. Will be held on Tuesday, October 11th, from 8:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. in the Regina Inn on Broad Street in Regina. And the guest speaker will be Dr. Vian Timmons, president of the University of Regina, who will speak on educating children for a just world. Tickets can be purchased at a mere cost of $10 apiece at PATHS. That's P-A-T-H-S. That's the Provincial Association of Transitional Housing in Saskatchewan. You can contact Crystal at 522-5315. And I think it's a pretty good deal, so you might want to do that. The other one is the Amnesty Conference. Amnesty Saskatchewan is holding a regional conference in Saskatoon on September 30th. And Craig Benjamin, who has been working with Amnesty, I think, for the past 13 years from Ontario, from our head office, who is our Aboriginal liaison, will be there talking about human rights for Aboriginal people at home and abroad. If you want to go to the conference, and if you're interested in finding out what it's about, you can go to the Amnesty International Facebook page, or you can go to our website at amnestyinternationalsaskatchewan.ca, I believe it is.
That's exactly right.
All right, and yep. There'll be information there about the conference, and that is on September 30th.
It shows it here, September 30th to October 1st.
Okay, so that would be, I think that's Friday night and Saturday, isn't it?
Yeah, is
it
Friday and Saturday.
Friday night and Saturday night.
Right. And online registration is available now.
Yeah, and I think they've lowered the price to $10 to register. So that's a deal, too, for the whole conference.
It's a deal at any price. Amnesty International is one of the more beautiful organizations on the planet Earth that actually cares about what happens to the human soul and spirit.
Thank you for that. So let's get back to what we're talking about today. About the booklet. I love this booklet. It's wonderful. The issues that the Saskatchewan Federation of Labor have focused on in this booklet currently are the energy crisis that we have in Saskatchewan. Do we have an energy crisis? Does everybody know we have an energy crisis?
I don't know about you, but if you drive a car, you mm-hmm. probably do, because you're having to pay a ton of money to fill up.
I was up to $1.30 a liter last week. It's going down a little bit, but I'm sure it'll be back up again.
Well, and your home heating costs and power and electricity. I mean, it's unionized, by the way, and they're crown corporations, which is also something that labor movement supports. The people of Saskatchewan actually own them, so all the profits go back to use for social programs. But the worldwide energy crisis is growing, and so I mean, you can feel it.
Is Saskatchewan the only province that has crown corporations?
No. It's not the only one that has crown corporations. Manitoba, in one of our other booklets, we talk about sort of the crown corporations and utility bundles and so on, which, by the way, our present government has not. They've stopped publishing the utility cost bundle.
We used to talk about that a little bit.
You know, we used to be the lowest in Canada.
Right.
We think we still are. And the lowest cost for utilities. And if you look at the other provinces, the ones that happen to have crown corporations are at the top. The ones that aren't heavily with crown corporations and public ownership are the most expensive.
I'd be curious to compare that with Ontario, where, like, for example, Ontario Hydro is now totally privatized and split up and everything.
If I had the first booklet, or the Crown Corporation's booklet that we put out, I'd be able to give you the answer to that question. And so, you know,
I'll have to get that booklet.
I'll be more than happy, which if I can sort of say to people that are listening, the Federation of Labor prints these booklets, and they are available free to anyone. And we will actually deliver and ship them. So if there's anyone out there that's interested in any of this information in the booklets, there's two ways that they can get it. One would be to call Tina at 525-0197 at the Saskatchewan Federation of Labor, or to go to the SFL website, which is very simple. It's SFL at sfl.sk.ca.
Okay. In talking about this energy crisis, recently, Human Rights Radio has been focusing on nuclear storage. We have had guests on our show who have had firsthand experience with talking about this, with being approached by the Nuclear Waste Management Organization from Ontario. We invited people from both political parties in our province to come on the show to talk about their mandates, their policies, and we did have Sandra Morin from the NDP show up, and unfortunately we didn't really hear back from the provincial government until after the show, apologizing that it took them a while to get back to us, and they were going to send me a package. That was probably about 3 weeks ago. I haven't received anything yet. And I did let them know that they're welcome to come on the show and talk about their policies on nuclear waste and on nuclear energy. So we haven't heard back yet, but we'll definitely keep you in touch if we do. Saskatchewan's oil sands is something that's in here. Besides nuclear waste and nuclear storage, Saskatchewan oil sands. When we talk about oil sands in the past few years in Canada, we're generally talking about Alberta.
Mm-hmm.
What's with Saskatchewan? We have an oil sand?
Not only do we have an oil sands, there's an estimated 27,000 square kilometers of northwest Saskatchewan that has oil sands potential. It's larger than Lake Erie. So, yeah, we do have them.
I notice on TV here lately, if you're watching CBC?
Oh, most of the channels.
There's a lovely commercial there where you have a company whose name escapes me showing us that they're going into the ground and they're disturbing less of the forest. So I think they're kind of giving us the idea, I'd love to investigate this, that they're not disturbing as much forest as, for example, the territory around Fort McMurray.
There are a number of companies that are doing that now, and I've seen a number of the commercials. Yes.
So, I don't know, is there an oil sands development in our future?
Oh, it's not in our future. It's
now?
It's now. Mm. And it's actively being explored and implemented, and the government of Saskatchewan is 100% behind it. And that commercial about not destroying the tree. Well,
yeah.
I don't know about you, but sort of back home in rural Saskatchewan, the one thing I did know is that trees also have roots. And so while you may not destroy you may not see this destroying the tree, you can be assured that it's destroying the roots. And quite frankly, I mean, this is reported in the booklet, and it's from CTV actually.
Okay,
70%. So. Let me back up. 150,000 tons of pollution produced by the Alberta oil sands, 150 tons that causes acid rain, 150,000 tons of acid rain, 70% of that falls on Saskatchewan. And that's from Alberta's oil sands, which are smaller than ours. 70%. So, I don't know, maybe those trees aren't in the path of the wind, but...
What about the people that are in the path of the wind?
Oh, well, I mean, what about them? Move them. Send them somewhere else.
Many nations, including Japan, Germany, China, Indonesia, Switzerland, and Italy, are turning away from nuclear power, especially after Fukushima in Japan. Are there oil sands anywhere else? Does Russia have oil sands?
That I don't know.
We don't know about that. No. I'd like to find out about that. If anybody has any information on Russian oil sands, send us an email. Okay, let's move on in the book. We're talking about environment still and learning from Alberta's mistakes. Here's one. Column of Doom. Not only does deep extraction take an extremely heavy toll on the environment, here we go, it's not just about trees, it also consumes huge amounts of energy. Alberta, for example, is even talking about building a nuclear reactor just to power their oil sands development. So here we have the nice little web coming together.
Okay, so we're not disturbing the trees, but we're putting all kinds of water down there. So, yeah.
I mean, the facts speak for themselves. If people are interested, and we think that people should be interested, at least as citizens, In a democracy that we have. I mean, you have the right to vote, so use your right. Make a choice about those things. But the facts are staggering. The facts are staggering. Because oil is stuck in sand, and in Saskatchewan our oil sands are deep, you need a lot of energy to get it out. So you can't use the oil to give you the energy to get the oil out of the ground. You got to find it somewhere else. And one of those ways is, I mean, shockingly, Alberta was looking at a nuclear reactor, which is bizarre. Build a nuclear reactor to create energy to get oil out of the ground, to destroy the environment and the plants and people around it is... and pollute the atmosphere. I mean, if I can, on page 7 of this booklet.
I'm just looking at that.
One of the things that shocks people is that in Canada, and again, this is not our opinion, these are reported as facts, Saskatchewan's greenhouse gas footprint is 71 tons, that's 71 tons of pollution per person. 71
That's
tons.
That's in Saskatchewan alone.
In Saskatchewan. In Canada, it's only 20 per person.
Wow.
And a lot of people, they think, well, Saskatchewan? I mean, we don't have these giant factories and everything like you see in, right. In the news. But Saskatchewan has the highest greenhouse gas emissions of any province in Canada. And we're more than almost four times the average in Canada. And we still haven't. And we're talking about an oil sands development and nuclear waste. What do you think that's going to do to that number?
Well, number one, what I'm looking at here is the government selling off conservation land. We're going to lose more it looks like we are. In 2010, our government passed legislation that greatly reduces the amount of Crown land that is set aside specifically as wildlife habitat or land to be conserved. The legislation gives the Minister of the Environment the authority to abolish the conservation or habitat status of Crown land and sell it off to private interests without having to get the approval of the legislature.
So they can just arbitrarily do it?
Without our permission, without coming.
No hearing.
No nothing.
No study. Just do it.
Not even your elected representatives in the legislature knowing about it. And that's why it's in red in the booklet. It's a fact. And this is another one that shocks people.
And
it wasn't a public, it wasn't broadcast a lot.
Well, that's the problem that I see, is it's not broadcast a lot. And they're not asking the people, what do you want?
And this is particularly, that authority to abolish conservation or habitat status of land.
So that's existing status.
Yes. And sell it to a private sector, which they are doing, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
If you check out the information, you can find out where. And you might find some coincidences about who's getting it quickest. In terms of the private, the private interest buying it, but in the booklet, what's really important, that's probably the wrong word. What's really disappointing, and of concern, is that a lot of that land, most of it actually, is covered by treaties. It's land that belongs or owned by, or at least the legal title to, rests with Aboriginal people in Saskatchewan. And under our Constitution and under decisions of our Supreme Court of Canada, Aboriginal people constitutionally have the right to have government consult with them before they do anything like that. And consultation means more than simply, by the way, that 20 hectares of land over there by Swift Current that used to be yours, not yours anymore. That's not consultation. And we point out the Leader Post reports on Vice Chief Lyle Whitefish with the FSIN, expressing deep concern about that. Like, why aren't you consulting with us? It's going to affect our lives and our rights. So to sort of unilaterally give that kind of authority to one person on behalf of the people of Saskatchewan without us knowing it, to do that, and that's a theme you'll see in all of our booklets, is this lack of consultation. And we're saying, look, it's up to you people. I mean, we're not telling you how to vote. We're not telling you what to do. But we do believe every citizen has a human right, is entitled to facts, and to know what's happening in their life. And if you think it's okay to have a government that doesn't consult with you about anything, fine. But we think you should know what they're doing.
I'm going to repeat what the back of the booklet states. Our government's policies determine what our economy and environment look like. These policies, in turn, affect our daily lives and those of future generations in the most fundamental of ways. Do you support the government's direction and choices? Our province, Saskatchewan, does not belong to any politician, political party, or government. It belongs to us, the people. If you don't consent to the shift from public responsibility to private profiteering, then what can you do? And I'll let you speak to that, Larry. as we're coming to the end of our show. If you want to get involved, if you want to have your voice heard about what kind of choices our government is making and what kind of options there are and different choices to be made, I'll let Larry talk about that. What can you do? This is one area where you can make a difference.
The Saskatchewan Federation of Labor's labor issue campaign is focused on two things. Is to provide as much facts and information as we can to people, not our opinion. And secondly, we want to know, because you know, we don't know everything that's going on. So if you have something that's happening that you're concerned about or that you think that people of Saskatchewan should know about, then let us know so that we can help get that information out around the province. And secondly, if you want to help get that information out, then come to one of our training sessions or contact the Saskatchewan Federation of Labor. The Labor Issues Campaign Coordinator is Tina Vukovic, and she can be reached at 525-0197 on October the 12th in the evening in Regina, and from 5:30 to 8:30. Citizens can come to a gathering there where we'll be talking more about this. There are going to be gatherings in Larange and Prince Albert and Moose Jaw coming up.
And where is the meeting in Regina?
We're still confirming the location at this point. But the critical thing is, if you have something to tell us, you want to share and spread, or if you want to get information and get information out, then contact the Federation of Labor office, because there will be someone who will be more than happy to come out and talk to you anywhere in the province, any time of day or night. It doesn't matter if there's only three or four or five of you, or it's a community meeting or a conference or whatever. We'll come out and we won't cost you anything, because our concern is, Cara Banks of the Federation of Labor said this. This is a turning point.
Okay. Thank you, Larry. And thank you for listening today. We'll be back again next week.
As we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. In every day, in every moment, in every corner of the world, injustice cries out for your intervention. To paraphrase a great humanitarian, if you can't help everybody, help just one. And whether the abuses stop immediately or take a long time to end, the gift of your attention and intervention can make a profound and positive impact on the ability of individuals and communities to endure and prevail. For info on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to our website at amnestysaskatchewan.ca. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."